This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
I would like justice for her. I know many of you want the same thing that I do. I want the violence to stop.
Just by showing up, we prevent these cowards from trying to take the streets.
We're just wanting the government to take responsibility for this situation and take a look at what's really going on.
So what's the easiest solution is to actually stand for the word community and give communities the control of their stations in order to be able to deliver on the Broadcast Act, which says that community broadcasters are one of the three pillars. You cannot have a complete Broadcast Act and or real democracy if there is no separation between community broadcasters and private broadcasters.
Welcome to Groundwire, community radio news brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations.
This episode of Groundwire was produced by volunteers at Kootenai Co-op Radio on Sinaik's traditional territory in Nelson, BC. In this episode, Groundwire attended the 26th Annual Women's Memorial March for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women in Vancouver's downtown east side on February 14th. Sophie Morasti spoke at the event about her sister, Rose Morasti, who was murdered in Blood Alley 25 years ago. Her message to those assembled at the march was that violence against Indigenous women has to stop and the Canadian government and people need to make changes.
This month, the BC government will be putting the new Water Sustainability Act into effect, which means that over the next 3 years, groundwater users will be expected to apply for licenses and groundwater will be regulated for the first time in the history of British Columbia. However, it's not clear that the legislation will protect local users of water. Groundwire spoke with K.L. Keevy from the Blewett Conservation Society about what may be a precedent-setting situation in southeastern B.C.
On the Community Radio Report, Ome Salma Rahemtula brings us voices from the recent CRTC Community and Local Television hearing, focusing on examples and lessons learned from community radio.
But first, here are the headlines. On February 6th, close to 200 anti-racist and anti-fascist activists came out in Montreal to disrupt an event planned by the Islamophobic group Pegida. Pegida, a far-right wing group with roots in Germany, has branches in several Canadian cities. However, their attempts to rear their heads on this side of the pond have been met with fierce resistance. At the rally in Montreal, part of an international day of action called by Pegida, only 7 members showed up. 4 managed to read a short statement in front of Justin Trudeau's riding office behind a heavy police cordon, while another 3 were quickly chased away by protesters. This rally, the third Pegida has tried to organize after being shut down twice by anti-racist protest in 2015, was called in the Montreal neighborhood of Villeray, a neighborhood with a large working-class immigrant population. Here is Jaggi Singh, one of the organizers of the counter-protest in Montreal.
So Pegida, Quebec, which is part of the International Pegida, a racist group, an Islamophobic group, a group that basically blames all of society's problems on the backs of Muslims. This group is trying to demonstrate here in the heart of Villeray, just 3 blocks that way. Their demonstration is supposed to start at 3. Their people are arriving around now, around 2:15, 2:30. But if experience teaches us anything, just like we did back in September, and just like we did back in March, just by showing up, we prevent these cowards from trying to take the streets. Our plan today is rather simple. We get on the streets, we march towards their location, and we hold our ground and make sure that they don't demonstrate towards here. Keep in mind that we also have other comrades somewhere around the neighborhood that will be around as well, so they'll be taking care of business as well.
Pegida actions on that same day were also disrupted by anti-fascist groups in Ireland, England, France, and the Netherlands. That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back.
And you just heard the track Jazz Hands. And that was just one sample from the NCRA's newly released CD, Unloggable Music Under a Minute, which is available at the website ncra.ca.
Now it's time for our feature stories.
Gunnar G. O'Sullivan attended the 26th Annual Women's Memorial March for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women in Vancouver's downtown east side. In this feature, you'll hear Sophie Moresti speaking about her sister Rose, who was murdered in Blood Alley in Vancouver 25 years ago. Sophie's message to the crowd was that violence against Indigenous women has to stop, and the Canadian government and people need to make changes. After you hear Sophie speaking, you'll hear Gennargi O'Sullivan and Danielle Carr in the studios at Vancouver Co-op Radio speaking after the march.
My name is Sophie Moresti, and I'm of the Denisovini and Cree Nation of Northern Manitoba at the tip of Reindeer Lake. I want to acknowledge the Goosen people of the Tsleil Waututh, the Musqueam, and Squamish Nation whose territory I'm on. This is my sister, Rose Moresti. She was killed in the downtown east side here 25 years ago. Her body was found in Blood Alley, broken, and she died in a very undignified way. She was nude from the waist down. And at that time, I was in shock and in a lot of pain, and I tried to get a police report and a coroner's report, and I still don't have one. There's been no closure around my sister's death. She left five children behind. Three of them were put into, taken away, and the ministry took them. My sister had a lot of pain in her life. I would say that it wasn't just the man that was involved in her death that killed her. I would say that it was a whole system. It was abuse of men. It was the Roman Catholic Church. It was intergenerational trauma. It was sexual abuse and rape. It was violence against her. And it was CFS who took her children away. The man that killed my sister served a month in the holding cell down here while he was waiting for trial. I never got a call from the Crown Prosecutor as to when the trial would be. I never saw his face. And they released him after 30 days. They said that was time served. I feel a real sense of injustice around her death. There's been a big gap in the lives of my family, myself, and her children. There's been no closure. I don't like how the police didn't investigate her death thoroughly. I don't like how the justice system treats her and many of our women. I don't like the racism and the sexism and the misogynist attitudes towards our women. My message here today is that this violence against our women has got to stop. I want the Canadian government to start making changes and active changes. I want the Canadian society to be educated on the history of our people and stop having these racist views against us and stop dehumanizing our women. I miss my sister. I've never spoken up publicly about her death. This is the first time. I would like justice for her. I know many of you want the same thing that I do. I want the violence to stop.
Well, we just heard from Sophie Moresti how the perpetrator only got 30 days in jail, and she still hasn't received a coroner report. And then another elder talked about how her son, his remains, his skull was found 30 years later. She's waited 30 years to find out what happened to her son. 2 weeks ago, they found his skull. And she said the pain never goes away. It really, really hurts. And she wishes that the government of Canada would do more. They keep saying that they will, but she really doesn't believe in them anymore. She's lost faith, you know, and that is important for people to realize as well, you know.
Yeah, I did see a lot of people came out with signs and drums. Traffic was blocked off to let the people march. And a lot of the signs had the word no justice on it, because mm-hmm. I think that's how a lot of people felt.
Yeah. Exactly. Good point. And but one of the other beautiful moments were when they would stop the march and the women, the elders, would do a ceremony. They would bring flowers to the spot where a missing woman or a murdered woman had been found. They would put flowers, red and yellow flowers, on the sidewalk or in the alley. They would put 6 candles, light them up, and they would sprinkle sage and cedar and tobacco in honor of those missing and murdered women. And that was a beautiful ceremony to witness.
I agree. I thought that was really beautiful as well. And when I was interviewing people there, I was actually walking and talking while we were doing the interview, which is kind of interesting. But always when it got to that moment where people had to lay the flowers, they're like, okay, hold on a second. I got to go do this first, and then I'll come back and talk to you, because people wanted to be part of that ceremony.
Beautiful. Okay, let's hear what you have.
All right, here's what some of the people had to say at the march.
Randy, I'm here on behalf of my auntie Jacqueline Murdoch. She was murdered. She's one of the missing women. She got picked up by the Penticton farmer. They found her remains. So that's why I'm here, for my auntie. My son says, we want change. We march in honor of our lost loved ones. We will be idle no more.
You're welcome. My name is Ruth Sims. I drove here from Seattle, Washington this morning, and I came in support of missing and murdered Indigenous women. My sign here says 4% of FEMA population is Indigenous Canadian females, and 23% of those Indigenous Canadian females are also female homicide victims. And I think things like that are not really well known, that it's such a high rate. And I think it's important for people to come out and support that and learn about it.
Is this their first event that you've come to?
No, this is the second one, but I think it's been going on for a number of years.
Since this is your second event, what brought you the first time? When did you hear about it?
Last year I met a woman by the name of Lillian Howard, who works here down with anybody working in the sex trade. She basically goes around and does sort of outreach and tries to get women into programs that are that can transition them out of the industry and off of the streets.
And what's the key message you think the community should know about this event?
I think the key message is people to understand that there are so many lost and murdered and missing Indigenous women, and they are part of this community, whether people realize it or not. And it doesn't just affect them, it affects everyone within the community, the police, the other people who still live here, the families, the friends, anyone who knew that person.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to Gennarji O'Sullivan of Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO, for the audio used in that report.
The next story comes to us from southeastern British Columbia. Catherine Fisher spoke with K.L. Keevy from the Blewett Conservation Society about BC's new Water Sustainability Act and what may be a precedent-setting situation in the small BC community of Blewett.
The Blewett Conservation Society is concerned about the impact a water bottling plant owned by Oakenshaw Water Limited could have on local residents in the small BC community of Blewett, near Nelson, BC, on the south side of the Kootenay River. Oakenshaw has been extracting groundwater and selling it to international markets for private profit for several years. One of the Society's concerns is about how Oakenshaw describes the aquifer versus the data that the BC Minister of the Environment has on it.
The Oakenshaw website has characterized the aquifer as being in a completely wooded, non-residential catchment area of 37 square kilometers. The government reports say that the aquifer itself is 11 square kilometers in fractured rock. Oakenshaw has characterized the aquifer as being a big lake. underground. So there's definitely conflicting information coming about the aquifer itself.
KLKV spoke with Groundwire about the potential impact about Oakenshaw's water extraction on Blewett domestic water users and the ecosystem. The Society is also concerned about some lack of clarity in BC's new Water Sustainability Act. The Society wants the BC government to apply the new regulations in a very clear way that recognizes local water users have priority over commercial users exporting water.
This month, any day now, the government will be putting the new Water Sustainability Act legislation into effect, which means that over the next 3 years, groundwater users will be expected to apply for licenses, and those licenses will be granted, and groundwater will be regulated for the